and welcome to Food Manufacturers Podcast. As a classic Brit, I'm going to open up with a comment about the weather. It has been freezing and I don't like it. And it's, you know, it's just horrible. But it has made me very happy about the investment I made into an electric blanket quite recently. If you're ever on a call with me, there's about a 98% chance that I am sitting atop of it.
Yes, I suppose we're all guilty. At least I'd like to think that we're all guilty of being on a Zoom call, sort of business up top and casual at the bottom.
The worst is when you're wrapped in a blanket and then you forget and then you go onto a call and you're like, oh yeah, I'm in a blanket right now or in a dressing gown because I'm cold.
Don't ask me to stand up, otherwise you will see a mummy covered in blankets from the waist down.
Have you made any good purchases recently on the topic of this?
Personally, I'm in the process of looking at buying a flat at the moment.
Well, that is a purchase, isn't it?
So, yeah, that's what's got all of my free time occupied at the moment.
How is that going?
Daunting. I have absolutely no idea what I'm doing whatsoever. But it's a fun adventure, so, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Wait, are we talking about the podcast or the house? All right, now you truly invested in this podcast, following that fabulous intro on purchasing houses and electric blankets, we're going to make a start on the actual topic of the day. As many of you will know, March 8th marks International Women's Day, and as such, we thought what a great time it would be to catch up with some of the sector's brilliant female leaders.
What can we look forward to?
Well, I've got three amazing female leaders for you, Gwen. First up, we have Ramona Hazan, founder of Ramona's Kitchen. Then we've got Cheryl Allen, head of confectionery, sustainability and health for Nestle UK and Ireland. And last but not least, Emma Robertson, chief technology officer, North America at Kerry.
What a lineup.
I know. And here's Ramona for you. So I'm here with Ramona Hazan. She's the founder of Ramona's Kitchen. Hello, Ramona.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, you're most welcome. So we are talking about all things female today in celebration of International Women's Day. And what I thought would be great, really, was just to get a, you know, dip inside your brain a bit. You know, you want to know about your business, why you first became interested in food, and you know, just a little bit about you as a female leader, because you don't really see that very often in the food and drink sector, do you?
No, you're right. I think, well, I'll tell you a little bit about it. I founded the business about 18 years ago, and my heritage is Mediterranean. My father Egyptian, grandparents Turkish. So I guess as a family, we're interested in food and feeding all the time. And as you can imagine, Mediterranean tables full of food, that was what I grew up with. So being interested in food was almost, there was no choice. And my father had some food businesses in South Africa when I was growing up. And so it was a natural sort of path for me to go down the food industry and also the Mediterranean food industry. And therefore, obviously, we are focused on hummuses, falafels and Mediterranean dips and things like that, although it diversifies sometimes, but mostly that's my passion. So, yeah, that's a little bit about me.
I love Mediterranean food. So my other half is part Italian, part Turkish. So literally like two amazing.
It's like the best combination ever. Yeah. You just have to marry the man.
Yeah, I know. Oh my God. Hopefully he's not listening. But I am. Yeah, honestly, I lived with his family during lockdown, and oh, I don't think I've ever had such amazing home cooked food. It was incredible. So
it's a real toss up between the Turks and the Italians. Yeah. Oh my God, no one's hungry in that home. No. That's for sure.
Now we've moved out. I am.
Yeah, no.
I'm like, oh, I miss it.
You got to speak to his mom and say, listen, could you just teach him a few more things? You know what he really needs to learn how to do is that dish that you know, like that, and then get him sort of get her on it and go, oh, you got to feed. Your girlfriend's hungry. You know, it's so sad.
So, you know, in your experience, I mentioned in the intro that food and drink is a sector dominated by men. Would you say that's a true statement? And if so, why?
You know, I don't think it's a completely true statement. I think I've come across a lot of people in different levels within the food industry. I think you're probably right in terms of founders and maybe C-suite execs, it starts thinning out a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think there are quite a few, but I think it is about us sort of role modeling the younger generation to say, listen, just because it might be in your family or your uncles, your fathers have businesses, doesn't mean you can't start something. Don't let what you see in our older generations mimic what you can do. And so as they start seeing, people like you and me who are front and center of the food industry and women, once they see more and more of that, it'll become more natural and maybe a path that the younger girls are willing to. And I'm not saying you're not younger, but maybe me. I don't want to offend you, but
you flatterer.
Yeah. But I think there should be a path that can be seen by them. We can be the role models to add onto it. And also for longevity, I wouldn't mind the younger generation, and I say younger, but younger than me, but that generation feeling okay to come back to that industry after having children and then moving up the rungs. You know, I think there's that, it's just, there's a lot of younger girls and then a gap. And then I feel like that's where we're losing people.
So you mentioned being a role model there. How can we be role models? How are you being a role model for the younger generation?
I try to do a lot of mentoring. And I think it's an important thing because it's not that I think what I've done is amazing. And it's not even that I think that I know all the answers. But what it does is it allows, and again, I'm going to use the word younger girls, the girls that are just starting out their careers, to have somebody to talk to, just to benchmark a few things off of. And it doesn't only mean in business or running a business. It can be just, you know, I'm in the food industry and I have a boss and I've just fallen pregnant. So how could I talk to them about that and still keep my career, you know, and things like that, which allow me to give them a bit of a viewpoint on what would I want to hear as a business owner, unrelated to a man or a woman. You know what I mean? What would I want to hear from the person who's just fallen pregnant or wants to get a raise or wants to be promoted, wants to move, you know, whatever the reasoning is, just to give them a little bit of guidance. And I think because there is that femaleness, I don't know what the word is here. I think there is an element of trust that says she absolutely understands what I'm talking about. Yeah. You know, she's had a child or got married, you know, or whatever it is, you know, even that is different for the boys sometimes. Do you know what I mean? Like those are things that I just think it's an opportunity for people who are my age to just give a little bit of guidance, show a slightly different path. And also as a business owner, give them the perspective of what their boss is probably thinking, which sometimes is about the business. It's not about their welfare. I mean, we obviously do care about our staff's welfare, but on the other hand, we have to protect the business. And so it gives them another side of it, which I think is important.
I think it's about relatability, isn't it? It's about, yeah. It's, you know, you were, if you see someone in a role and you go, oh, you know, a female's doing that role, you think that's something I could do. And yeah. it's about inspiring. If there's not a female role model, there isn't someone that you, or equally just someone you can relate to, you're sometimes not going to think about that as an option. And I think that's been the point. I think we are starting to see a sea change in terms of those role models. I think that people are starting to speak up, you know, business leaders like yourselves. You know, what do you think's changed to sort of make, you know, leaders like yourself think, actually, we need to start encouraging people. We need to start having a real presence here and influencing people and inspiring people.
For me, the reasoning is I'm worried about the ambition of the younger generation. I'm not seeing this go-getter attitude. I'm feeling more like there's a, well, I don't know if I want to start my own business. I'm not sure if I could. You know, like I want to, you know, you have to be crazy to do that job. It's hard. It's really, really, really hard. And I just don't feel like I'm not seeing enough of it and enough ambition and go-getting and drive. out of the next generation of women in business. And I want them to understand that it's achievable and doable. And just because, and there is no barriers for them. There is absolutely no barriers. There was no barriers for me. There's none for them. It's if you choose and make the decision to work as hard, the world's your oyster. Run. You know what I mean? So I'm trying to instill a bit more ambition and drive and oomph into that next generation. It's not about saying I know better than my male counterparts. I don't. It's just about saying, come on, you know, there's really nothing standing in front of you. Go make the decision to do it and run. You know what I mean?
So you wouldn't say that there were any barriers which you face as a result of your gender in business at all?
It wasn't for me. I didn't feel it. I think there is a link to a sense of self-worth and confidence. And I think I have a good self-worth and confidence in myself and my abilities and my knowledge of when I'm wrong, which happens a lot. So it's not about ego. Do you know what I mean? It's not that I'm saying, oh, I got it all right. So thank God, you know, no, you get it wrong a lot. It's just, but there is an element of, I don't mind trying. I trust my abilities to try. If I get it wrong, I'll trust my abilities to try something else. So I think there is a definite link between the confidence that we show and instill in ourselves, in our own personal belief in ourselves, and the barriers that are created. I've sat on many groups of with women, and they'll go, well, do you think there's an issue with ageism or sexism? And I'm like, if you're in a meeting with a whole lot of men, but you walk in there with confidence and the ability and talk sense and show them that worth, it doesn't come up in conversation.
You mentioned, you know, about ambition and, you know, not seeing that drive. Do you think, you know, how can we, I suppose, evoke that drive? Is there anything that, you know, leaders can do to help? Or do you think, you know, do you think for example there's enough opportunity in terms of apprenticeships, or is it just a case of we just have to kind of show that it's possible?
I think it's a bit of both. I think there it's available for the choosing. It's not that there are no apprenticeships, it's not that businesses don't want apprenticeships, and it's not that any business doesn't want good people. Mm-hmm. Every business does, male, female, cats, we don't care, we just want good workers. So that's the truth.
I'm a cat person. I would love that. If it was hygienic, I would be all like over it.
My technical team are busy getting defibrillators out at the moment. What did she say, Kat? No. But what I'm trying to say is it's not gender specific. If we choose and we work hard and we're the first in and the last out and we work hard and achieve and want to achieve, who's going to stop them? Why would you stop somebody who's achieving something in your business? It wouldn't make any logical sense.
I want to reverse slightly, because you told us, you know, you obviously grew up in a home where food was, you know, an important part of your home life. But what was your route into food professionally? You know, did you go on a formal course? Yeah, how did you get into this?
Without doubt, the worst cook on the planet, right? So this was the funny thing. So when I was a computer engineer when I came from South Africa, and I wanted to start my own business, and I thought I'm probably going to the food industry, but my friends all looked at me and went, "For God's sake, don't give up your day job. You are literally going to be on the streets. You cannot cook." I didn't learn anything, but I did start doing the recipes, and the first few they were like, no. And then I just carried on practicing, and eventually I realized that actually I do have a skill in it, in cooking and creating recipes, which just got better and better over the last 20 years. And I suppose I got a bit more confident in just throwing things in and it turning out okay. But the route professionally to food was only through my enjoyment of feeding others. I really, really believe that if you want to show someone love, bring them to an abundant table. When you go to someone's house and they give you a bowl of monkey nuts and a beer, you think, oh, how special do I feel? But if you go there and there's a table full of food, and it doesn't have to be expensive food. We're not talking about money here. We're talking about abundance of giving. And that is in my nature a lot. And so when I could make products and give people a lot of food and a lot of good food at a reasonable price, it just fell into my core. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's making me very hungry as well.
So, that's the Mediterranean for you.
I know. Yeah. I'm always thinking about food. It's actually, I'm not even kidding. It's actually a running joke among some of my friends, just how much I'm always like, what? So when are we going to have dinner?
I know, straight after lunch. Yeah, what is exactly. What are we going to do for dinner? I know. I'm exactly the same. And the interesting thing is that I had some friends over for brunch the other day, and I must have made like four or five different things. And they arrived and they went, I swear to God, we thought you were just going to give us a croissant and a cup of coffee. Like, and I had made pancakes and a frittata and like a, you know, I like mealed it up, you know, but it wasn't like, again, it's a few eggs. Do you know what I mean? This was not brain surgery. I didn't spend a lot of money on it, but they felt so loved because we just put so much food on the table, more than any conceivable amount that could be eaten. But that's my nature.
That sounds fantastic. I definitely want to come and have lunch at yours.
We'll do a food manufacturer magazine dinner at the Ramona's, literally at Ramona's kitchen.
Amazing. I'm so up for this.
Oh, that's going to be wild.
Talking about, you know, International Women's Day, the theme this year is equity. If I'm being honest, it wasn't a term I'd come across before, and I had to do some, you know, research into it. Just for anyone listening that's not aware, equity is more about creating a level playing field for everyone, but giving sort of extra, I suppose, assistance in for those that need it. So the best way I can analogize this is sort of describe this is when someone wants to get something off the top shelf, you've got a very tall person and a very short person like myself, and you've both got access to the same opportunity, but the person who's shorter might just need, you know, a step or something so that they're able to actually reach that item. And that's essentially what equity is. I'm going to have someone going, no, it's not. Now, <Yeah. laughs> okay, that's an awful explanation of it.
Well, I'm not going to disagree with you. I think it's a fabulous analogy.
Well, thank you very much. So, you know, what issues do you believe that we need to address in the workplace to help embrace this concept of equity?
You see, I'm excited that we started using the word equity rather than equality.
Yeah.
Because I'm a big, big, big protagonist of the fact that women need to be treated the same, not better. And equity for me is sometimes it's a male who needs to go and fetch the child or do the school run in the morning. And sometimes it's a female that needs to do a school run in the morning. And that balance is what I'm looking for in the workplace. I just want a situation where we don't have to think about who we're hiring. The right person gets the job no matter what. And sometimes it's the men, and that doesn't mean we're against women. It just needs to, that so that equity is what's important to me, because sometimes it's the man that needs that extra box to look over the wall or the stepladder in your analogy, and sometimes it's the woman. And I want a workplace that says when we give it to the woman because she's got to go and fetch a child at 3, but he's going to work again between 6 and 10 p.m., then I don't have a problem. I don't want the men saying, oh, of course, because she's the girl. But on the other hand, also, when we give it to the boys or give a job to the boys, I don't want the women going, well, you haven't got enough women on your board, or you don't have enough women. I don't want to be counting. I want us to be giving the best person the roles, and I want us to not be apologizing for it, because that's when it's equal.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And I think that's a lovely approach. And I do hope at some point we get to that point. So let's, you know, on that topic of, you know, all genders treating everyone equally, how do you as a business owner ensure that all genders are on that same level playing field in your workplace?
I'm probably a bit harsh, you know, because I say that because I didn't get I didn't get any equity from myself when I started this, you know, this business. There was no, oh, you had a baby. Do you need a little bit of time off? No, there wasn't. Like, no, my own boss, who was me, didn't give me any equity at all. But I lead by example, and I want my staff to see me in first and last out. And I want my staff to see me working the hardest and sometimes go to my kids and then log on a bit later. You know, I just think we need to we treat them equally by showing them that we treat ourselves equally, and that there's balance to life, and that sometimes there's a child run, and sometimes a child gets sick, and sometimes whatever it is for both genders. And I think we just give everybody the same fair chance by being balanced. Just be balanced. If somebody needs to, if somebody's putting in the work, but they're putting it in slightly different hours or whatever that flexibility is, the business is getting what it needs. And as long as the business is getting what it needs, everybody is protected. And we must just be very careful that it's not about an entitlement. Nobody is entitled to equity. It should be the business's will to give what's needed to the employees for them to succeed. And it should be on them not to feel like they deserve it, but to work just as hard for that partnership, because the work you put in means that nobody has a problem giving you flexible hours or whatever is needed. That extra box is not a problem because you're giving it back. It's a two-way street between the business and the employees. Yeah. And that's, I think, the important part.
So I'm not going to ask you, Ramona, you know, about what advice you'd give to other aspiring female leaders, because we've just established that whatever gender you are, you know, we should all be having, that, you know, we shouldn't be looking at this. We should, obviously, we want to celebrate women, we want to celebrate men, we want to celebrate all genders. But let's talk about this as just you as a leader rather than you as a female leader. What advice would you give to aspiring leaders for succeeding in business?
Well, I'm very pleased that you've changed this question slightly and not said as a woman, because for me, they are identical. What you need is identical. There is a sacrifice, a serious sacrifice in leading and running businesses and growing within all businesses. It requires sacrifice. I don't spend more time with my children. I don't sacrifice more time with my kids than my husband does. We both work very hard and we both sacrifice time with our children for it. So I think for me, it's about flexibility. It's about having the confidence to change decisions. Just be pliable. Life requires pliable people, not strong-willed people. But it requires flexibility. Sometimes it just hits you from the side. Just change tack. It's okay to just adjust and go. Don't be so rigid. It needs movement. It's not the things that you were worrying about that happened. It's the other stuff that you had no idea was coming from left field. And that's why it requires that pivot. We all learned that over COVID, didn't we?
Absolutely. Well, Ramona, you've been a fabulous guest. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me about this, you know, important topic, and tell us about, you know, your experiences as a leader.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been fabulous.
Ramona was great fun, and I love the fact it was her that brought up cats and not me. So for anyone that knows me, I have two cats and they are in fact my family, and it is a bit of an obsession. Funny story, right, Gwen? My younger cat is called Bear, but I didn't name him that, so he is now Bear Grylls.
Shall we listen to the next interview before you start digressing about cats?
Oh,
again.
Did I tell you about the time that my cat sat on...
So, Cheryl, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
No, it's our pleasure. So, we're talking about equity in food and drink. In terms of equity, it was actually a term that I wasn't familiar with until International Women's Day actually announced it as their theme. Is it something that you've come across before?
It's definitely something that is a hot topic for us at Nestle. And it's something that we're talking about a lot in the business at the moment. I think we have a really kind of strong focus just now on diversity, inclusion, belonging, and how all of those concepts are sort of interrelated. And for us, equity is a really important part of that. It's very distinct from equality, which you know, is essentially creating a level playing field, that there's no barrier for people to particularly participate in something. But for us, equity is understanding that there are groups who may need some extra support or extra help to enable them to achieve that equality, or to be able to perform at their best, or be able to thrive in a certain environment. And we absolutely know that when you have diverse groups who are feeling included in the organization, that they feel that they can perform, you know, to the best of their ability, that's going to have not only the best outcomes for the individual, but the best outcomes for the business as well. So it becomes a win-win.
You have such a great way of describing that. I was like, imagine a wall and you're trying to reach the top of it, but one of these needs a step.
Do you know what? That's a really nice kind of pictorial way of describing it as well. I completely get it.
So in terms of supporting equity in the food and drink sector, what can we do to ensure we're actually achieving that and actually, you know, giving those well, equal opportunities and actually equal opportunities?
Yeah. Do you know what? I think in the food and drink industry, perhaps more than any other, this is something that we should be able to achieve. And actually, we ought to focus on achieving. And that's because it's one of the product categories or one of the industries that has 100% consumer penetration. Everybody, by definition, everybody is a consumer of food and drink. And so it's really important that for those working within the industry, that we are reflecting the society in which we're operating. And, you know, that's about bringing new ideas, being able to really get close to our consumers and understand the different viewpoints of different consumer groups. So I really feel that it would be a strong benefit advantage for our particular industry. I think we have to look at a variety of different techniques, if you like, for building equity within the industry or within an organisation. I know that we're talking today, particularly in the context of International Women's Day. So I'll focus perhaps the answer a little more on gender. I think it's clear to me, and being a woman, having worked with a lot of women, one of the key concerns for women can be the fear, perhaps the concern, that a flexible working pattern or a part-time working pattern may inhibit their ability to progress in their career, which may also be important to them. And I think it's really important that we start to decouple those two things, that progression is not contingent on doing necessarily a full-time role. I think that's the first one. And I'm really proud, actually, of the steps forward that Nestlé has made in this regard in recent years, both in terms of more flexible working practices, more roles being made available for people who want to work flexibly or part-time. That includes at senior levels in the organisation, not just at entry levels. And I think that's a really important message to send. And, you know, I think knowing also that the policies that we've been introducing around flexibility are gender neutral is also critical, because quite often, and these conversations are often coming up in the context of caring for children. So actually providing men as well, potentially dads, with the opportunity to work flexibly, I think is also a great step forward. So I think that's probably the first area that I'd focus on, that sort of approach on flexible working and really decoupling that from progression. A couple of other areas that I think I'd touch on to answer this question. I think you can improve the gender balance within the organisation through some careful planning. That's around career and development planning, gender balanced recruitment in the first place, success, making sure you've got really good succession plans and diverse succession plans in place as well. And again, I can speak for a little of the progress that we've made in this space. So, you know, at a global level now, we've achieved the initial target of 30% of our top 200 roles in the business now being undertaken by women. Clearly 30% is not enough. There is still a way to go, but this was the first step, and that transition is happening. More broadly within the business, we're in the position where 45% of manager roles are taken by women. So we're getting there. There's still a way to go, but the progress is being made. And I think it's within every organization's gift to make that happen. I think the final thing that we can do to kind of embrace equity is to try to perhaps remove, and your wall analogy comes in nicely here, sort of remove some of the barriers or some of the steps that may be missing for certain groups. And that may be by having proactive policies that can support some of the things that women are more like, challenges perhaps that women are more likely to encounter. And that could be things like domestic violence. It could be things like the menopause. It could be things like harassment in the workplace. Not all of those are completely unique to women, but are more likely to affect women than men. And I think these are things that within the food industry, within the different companies that exist, it's absolutely within our gift to be able to manage.
I think it sounds like you're doing some terrific stuff at Nestle there, and you know, really to create that level playing field, you know, to give that lift to people that need it. I'd like to talk about a little bit about you, obviously as a female leader in the food and drink sector. You know, how did you become interested in this sector, which is arguably rather male dominated?
I became interested actually, so way back in my university days. So I did a degree in modern languages and knew when I graduated from university, I wanted to go into business. And particularly with a languages degree, I was looking at international companies, looking at what was sort of around and about, who were looking for graduates. And, you know, when I saw at the time a company like Nestle, with its Swiss background, so the ability to use French and German, but also just with this fantastic array of household name brands that have been in my life since my early childhood, then actually it was really appealing to me, because actually the direction I wanted to take in my involvement was going to be through marketing. So to be able to work on brands like these just seemed like a fantastic opportunity. So having received the job offer and then being asked, you know, we can offer you two locations, which location and which category would you like to work in? My eyes lit up at the prospect of coming to York, the home of confectionery for Nestle, the home of Kit Kat, being able to join the business and work on, you know, over the years, a number of iconic brands. That's been super special for me.
You speak about the role with such passion, and I really hope that there are, you know, people listening to this. You know, obviously we are a trades publication, but you hope sometimes the podcast goes out to other people considering careers like this, and you know that it might inspire them to get involved, because you know the food and drink sector is such a fantastic career path to have. Let's talk about issues again, and from a personal standpoint, were there any issues that you faced in the workplace because of your gender? So, you know, I've heard stories, anecdotal stories from people where they've been talked over in meetings, where they've had less opportunities, where they've, you know, actually found it quite intimidating because they are, you know, the only woman in the room, for example. And that's not unique to the workplace. That's also been anecdotal stories about people, you know, studying these kind of careers as well.
I have to say, I have been, you could say, fortunate, although it would be great to be in a world, wouldn't it, where we don't say we're fortunate to not have had bad experiences in this regard. But I have had an overwhelmingly positive experience in my time at Nestle. I have been with the business for 20 years, and I would like to think that I wouldn't have stuck around this long if it was a company where I felt my values weren't shared, where I wasn't respected, and so on. that's not to say that everything is perfect all the time. It would be I'd be doing a disservice to the listeners and to pretend that that's the case. It's clearly not true. I guess I wanted to recognise the fact that I suspect, compared with many others, I have had a very positive experience, but not always perfect. So one example I can give you. A few years ago now, I was in a meeting which was happening late in the day and it was significantly overrunning. And I had to leave that meeting, leave work for a personal commitment outside the office. And what happened was that after I left, and bearing in mind this was a meeting that had been overrunning, after I left, and I came back in the next morning and I discovered that a decision had been taken, the meeting carried on, and a decision had been taken that would negatively impact my work and that of my entire team. So you can imagine I wasn't best pleased about that.
Yeah.
But fortunately, I did have the relationship with my line manager at the time, and it was a man, and I was able to say to him this, to sort of call it out and say, this is what happened. I don't think that this is right. Next time we need to stop the meeting and resume, because these types of things should not be discussed without me. And you know what? I think it was probably a good learning experience for both of us, actually. Sometimes it almost takes these things that do not necessarily always happen with intent or with malice, but almost takes for these things to happen and but also for them to be called out for then positive actions to come from it. So that's probably one of the examples that would spring to mind to describe. Equally, I feel very positive about the support that I have had over many years in the company from a mix of line managers, mentors, peers, both female and male, actually, who have helped me kind of grow and flourish in my career as well.
That's really lovely. And it's great that you had that rapport to actually go to that, because I feel like in some situations, not everyone would have the confidence to speak up about that. So it's lovely that, you know, that Nessie had kind of fostered that environment in which you felt safe to do that. Talking about Nessie and, you know, helping you flourish as a leader, you know, what were the, in what ways, you've spoken about them very positively, so what things did they do that were really, really great, that has that, you know, allowed you to progress?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I remember very early in my career, right at the beginning, I had my first couple of line managers were absolutely superb, and actually coming from university at the time and into the workplace properly for the first time, having the blend of support and challenge, so the opportunity to really find the way to learn, to do my best work, perhaps to make mistakes because it happens, of course, but to be supported, I think that gave me a great foundation and helped me to build my confidence. So I think there was something there that was about quality line management. I think I've had the benefit of coaching support and mentoring support, and again, that's something that we offer freely within the business, a network of coaches who you can apply to, you know, who you can write to, who you can request to engage with if there's something that you want to work through, and then also mentors to be able to talk about when it's not been, say, issue specific, but maybe about broader career or broader development opportunities. I think as well, the idea that I've been able to be myself at work, and while, you know, Nestle will look at its people against a set of behaviours and values, etc., there's room within that framework for you to be yourself. I don't feel that I have to come to work, put a different mask on and be someone I'm not. And I think, you know, when you're forced into that position, it would be very difficult for you to do your best work and flourish. And thankfully, that's not something that I've had to do here. So I think kind of culturally, behaviourally, I think that's been a really important part of my journey too.
And I think that
that's important, regardless of what your gender is, because that, you know, different personalities, characters bring diversity of thought, you know, and I think that's great that, you know, you're able to do that. And, you know, that's also something I've, you know, I'm lucky as well. Again, I'm using the word lucky, but I'm lucky to be able to do that. And yeah, I, you know, completely agree with you. It'd be great to have a time where we don't have to use the words fortunate and lucky. So just a final question then. So you're a leader. I keep saying that, but you are.
Yeah.
It's International Women's Day. We're celebrating you, right? What would be your top tips for succeeding to other aspiring female leaders? You know, perhaps people that aren't in such a fortunate position, that are, you know, finding that they are being spoken over in meetings, for example. What would you say to those people?
Yeah. I think that I guess that there are various elements and things that can help to set you up for success, some of which will directly answer your question and some that are slightly broader than that. And actually, I think some of these are almost regardless. Some of these points are regardless of gender. I would give the same advice to a man coming to speak to me as I would a woman. And I think it starts with, you know, first of all, build your credibility in your role by delivering what you promise. If you're consistently and reliably delivering, that gives you a base of kind of credibility and gravitas that you can build on. I think having initiative and curiosity to be able to go and learn new things, continually learn, will also help you grow and build. It will also give you a whole set of examples, experiences that of things you've done yourself, but also what people around you have done, whether that's what they've done or how they've done it, a whole set of experiences that you can collect. And some of them you can put in your pocket and think, that's a behaviour I would like to replicate. And then other times where you see something that's not so good and you go, do you know what? I never want to be like that. I never want to do that. But again, it's a good moment it's a good opportunity to be able to reflect on some of those things. I think finding work that you really enjoy, if you can do that, has such a big benefit, because I think when you find someone who's passionate about the work they do, it absolutely shines through. I think kind of coming now more to your point, so after the generic points, some of the ones that specifically will try to answer your question, I think don't be afraid to ask for help or advice or support. Sometimes we think that we have to take, and I have absolutely been guilty of this, where you think I have to prove myself and I have to take the weight of something on my shoulders, because if I need to ask for help, is that a sign that it's a weakness or I'm not capable or whatever? But actually, in my experience, when you do ask for help, people are very generous with their time. People are generally willing and able to give it. And I think that's true if you're having a tricky time at work generally, or there's something that you need just some general advice on to help you do your role better. My final point, which is I think more gender specific, and again, I recognize it in myself and in many female members of teams that I have led over the years, is around having confidence in yourself, believing in yourself, in your worth, and knowing that you can really add value every single day. And nobody can really take that away from you, actually. I think, but it has to, it can be tricky at times, but it has to come from within, this belief that, you know, you are good enough and that you can add value every day through what you do.
I think there's some excellent advice there, and I was nodding profusely along with you because I was recognizing traits in myself as well. Cheryl, thank you so much for your time and your invaluable insight. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak with you today.
Thank you.
So I really love Cheryl's comment on how you need to have a sense of curiosity and to be prepared to continue learning throughout your entire career. You know, things change all of the time. And being able to be able to adapt to that and being prepared to adapt to those sort of changes are what really makes good leaders, being able to, you know, being able to see what's happening and being able to go, well, I know that what I'm doing isn't right for this right now, but I can then learn how to, you know, well, adapt to the situation. And also not being afraid to ask for help as well. I know I'm very guilty of that myself. You know, you'd be stuck in a difficult situation, but sometimes, you know, you just ask someone and they'll have the exact thing for you to be able to help you out in need.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we are all guilty of that, not asking for help and just sort of thinking it's a sign of weakness, but it's not. She was really inspiring. I mean, you know, as was Ramona. Should we hear from Ema next?
Oh, let's.
Ema, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for joining me.
Yeah, thanks so much, Bethan. Great to be here.
So let's jump right in. Tell us about your role at Kerry, you know, how you first became interested in food.
Yeah, so maybe I'll talk a little bit about how I got into the food industry. Look, I am Irish. I've lived in the US for almost 20 years, but Ireland is a country that has incredible food heritage, and you know, our supply chain is very short in Ireland in terms of farm to fork. But I grew up on a farm in the west coast of Ireland, and very much, I think, surrounded by the elements of what the food and beverage industry is. And then when I went to school, I had a physics teacher who certainly ignited and drew me into science, ignited my interest in it. So I, you know, went through school, ended up choosing food science in university based on a number of different interest points. And then when I graduated, I had the opportunity to join Kerry through their graduate program. And look, Kerry is the company to join if you want to have a career in food science. I certainly did at the time. My university lecturers probably weren't holding me back to do a PhD at that program, so I decided to go into the industry, and I suppose it went from there. So I went almost immediately to the US and started in product development, and then over the years took a role in commercial or business development, and then ended up leading one of their businesses, and last year had the opportunity to take on my current role, which I could say I very proudly am part of a team of over 250 scientists across both regulatory and R&D. And we at Kerry work across the entire industry of food and beverage, all the way from alcoholic beverage and refreshing beverage, all the way to supplements, functional foods. Of course, dairy is in there, given that that's our heritage. But the whole area of plant-based, I think food protection and really food preservation, as well as proactive health. Those are really some of the big platforms that we've an opportunity to work on. So yeah, I'm kind of in my dream job at this stage, Bethan.
Oh, amazing. I mean, in your experience, talking about, you know, the food and beverage sector, it's often dominated by men, right? You know, do you agree with that? And if so, why do you think that that's happened? And how can we encourage more women into the industry?
Yeah, look, I think the stats are there, right? I think there's no doubt about it that it is there. The reality is that I think in the biological sciences, which I think food and beverage belongs to, we are globally somewhere over 45% in terms of women. But I think if you just stand back and look at STEM in general, there's no doubt about it that we're underrepresented. I see less domination. I see more women in it than I did when I started my career. There's no doubt about that. But I also think it looks at levels, you know, and I think now more and more we're seeing women at the most senior levels of organizations, especially in the food and beverage industry. Personally, I think a lot of it is about seeing and being able to believe. So I think the events like women and girls in science, I think certainly helps shed focus a light on it. Celebrating the work in that organizations like the WFF, Women in Food Service Forum, just thinking about a couple of organizations, they really put a spotlight in it. And I think, to be honest, if you can see, you can believe that you have opportunities. And I think there's definitely an opportunity to empower new generations of women to join the food and beverage industry. The reality is there's a lot of problems to be solved. And I think there's much innovation that's needed when we think about the demands of a growing population that we have, when we think about, you know, the level of food waste that occurs in our industry, when we think about creating new products and plant-based. Usually a lot of women are certainly at the core of solving for or innovating against those opportunities. But I think for me, putting a focus on it and really intentionally going, you know, bringing young women and girls through the education program, through the work experience, I think we've a long way to go to bring more women in.
Now, you mentioned kind of barriers there. So two questions coming your way about that. From a personal standpoint, were there any barriers which you faced as a result of your gender?
I mean, I think it would be difficult for any woman to answer no to that question. I think whilst I didn't have any necessarily intentional barriers that I felt at the time were put up against, when I look back, especially the earlier stages in my career, where generally I was usually the combination of the youngest person in the room as well as a woman. I think one of the hardest barriers was there's a lot of real gendered traditional normative behaviors around, right? And they usually are, I think, male behavioral based. And I think that's one of the barriers that I really faced is I've seen it to be virtually impossible to be yourself and to succeed and to grow and to take on new opportunities. It felt like you had to sort of become, there was a definition or a mold what you needed to be, and then you really had to fit that. And I think that was, you know, things like keeping your work and your private life very, very separate, or being in situations where I've gotten feedback that I just need to work on my executive presence, which I think is this wonderfully vague term that really has absolutely no specificity to it and very difficult to define. So for me, I think those were some of the barriers I faced, and probably I felt it was quite difficult to develop my own confidence. Now, I would have had some incredibly strong mentors and role models. And as I went further in my career, I had a lot of incredibly strong women role models. And I think everyone gave me a little bit along the way to put into my confidence and to put into my capability and experience. And so I was able to, you know, overcome some of those barriers.
I think that's such prudent remarks that you've made there about, you know, sometimes having to put on not be yourself. And you know, a previous interviewee that was speaking to you said, you know, they were fortunate that they didn't feel like they had to wear a mask, but sometimes, you know, that does happen. You know, when you go into a professional environment, what, and you also mentioned about sort of you know, sometimes being the youngest in the room and a female. I mean, I've definitely experienced that too, where you know, I've got a bit of a baby face and I'm really short as well which I always think, you know, sometimes people don't take you as seriously when you are, you know, perhaps female, shorter and young, you know, triple threat there.
Well, and I think it's hard because you also are in a situation where, you know, it's very difficult. What I'm talking about when I think about normative behaviors or keeping your work and personal, I would have had two very different ways of engaging with people. People kind of, and I've gotten this feedback, you know, you engage with people, your organization and or kind of your level and below in the organization in one way, which for me would have been a very authentic, open way, maybe kind of a much freer way. And then I would have behaved kind of in a senior way within our organization in a very, you know, kind of buttoned up, tried my best to maybe from time to time show a glimpse of my personality, but treated very, I suppose, very formally. And then when I went to customers, I was kind of the best of myself because I think I prepared a lot. I would have thought a lot more about those relationships. And maybe in hindsight, for me, it was that I didn't invest as much energy in preparing for those, let's call it within my organization experiences in the same way that I did customers. And look, there's a lot when you go back to think about the earlier parts of your career, you certainly look at things in a different way than you might have in the moment. But I do think the reality is that there were in the past, not so much now, but in the past, there were real ways where you could visibly show that you were, you know, trying to present yourself in a certain way. And sometimes it's difficult to navigate that environment.
And And in terms of sort of general issues, not necessarily talking from a personal experience now, but issues that are influencing females, you know, what would you say needs to be addressed right now in the workplace to, you know, help embrace the theme of International Women's Day this year, which is equity?
Yeah, look, it's an obvious one, but I think it has to be said. Clearly, the gender pay gap, I think it's being worked on. Yes, I think it's being worked on at the level that needs to be. I think here in the US, we're starting to see some states embrace laws that will progress that along. So I think that's clearly number one. I'm careful to say this next one because I think I'm maybe being biased around parents, but the affordable childcare is just a huge, huge issue. And I was reading something recently that showed that inflation has tracked overall four times higher than overall inflation for childcare. So when you think about the choices that people make when they choose to have a family, I think we're at risk of losing an entire generation of leaders in the industry because of that. And I think there's really, really tough choices that people have to make that is no reflection on their ambition or their capabilities. It's simply an economic decision. So I think those are two. Another obvious one is flexibility. And I think we've learned a lot over COVID about flexibility, but I think there's still a long way to go when we think about the ability to be able to bring people into the workforce who might need slightly different accommodations. When we think about, I mean, this is really, I suppose, the difference between equity and equality, right? People need you know, whether it's a disabled person who needs a different working environment physically, or you have somebody who needs different working hours due to personal or home commitments. And I think giving people the ability to be able to bring their whole selves to work, to me, that's what I think those are the issues that need to be embraced. And I think why the theme of International Women's Day is particularly important this year, and I think particularly impactful.
Looking at Kerry specifically here, you know, how what have they put in place to help women, you know, succeed, to progress, and also to embrace, you know, this this whole concept of equity?
Yeah, I think we're early in our journey at Kerry, and I think there's a number of things that we're incredibly proud of in terms of our progress. Our representation by women and equality and equity for women is reflected in the KPIs that we put around our Beyond the Horizon sustainability strategy, because we believe they're not two separate things. They're one and the same, and they're very much integrated into our business. And those statistics measure things like women in senior leadership and women in senior management. And we're very much on track for our metrics there, and we're making progress steadily year on year. We're at over 35% representation of women in senior leadership roles in North America, which is something to be very proud of. We last year, and it's strange to think that it's only been a year, but we established Illuminate, which is our employee resource group for women globally. And it's about illuminating the role of women in the Kerry workplace and sharing, you know, shining a light on the capabilities that we have, and also on the advocacy and advancement and flexibility that we need to put in place for women. We've had global and regional DI&B lead roles be put in place across the region. And our CEOs, whether it's the WEP United Nations commitment or the Action Pledge in North America, the CEO Action Pledge, we've really demonstrated externally and through the organizations that we are a big part of where our commitment is. I mean, maybe the last thing I'd say is that we are a manufacturing organization as well. And so it's very important for us that we have policies that exist across our employee base, and not just, you know, in an office somewhere, but that in our manufacturing locations, that our Kerry colleagues have a flexible working environment. We have access to things like nursing or prayer rooms, thinking about the food and the snacking that are available in those locations, more comfortable uniforms. And we introduced the concept of dress for your day, which, you know, sounds like a simple thing, but in reality, when you think about thinking about how can I be comfortable in my working environment, how can I bring myself to work, having the ability to have a flexibility there, we have found has been incredibly helpful. So yeah, a number of different ways to show in the everyday and in the strategic ways why it's important to us.
I think if we had dress for your day, I'd be in pajamas. and a dressing gown all well, of the time.
You would make your choice. You'd make your choice for yourself. Yes, absolutely.
So as a successful, you know, leader, because that's what, you know, this is all about, you know, celebrating you, leader, you're a female leader. What advice could you give to other aspiring female leaders for succeeding in business, particularly those that maybe lack the confidence to, you know, to go into a career path such as this, or maybe even those that are on their way but have experienced, you know, certain barriers?
Yeah, I think I didn't realize for a long time that doubt, or maybe that, you know, let's say blips in your confidence, or that feeling of not being prepared, that everybody experiences that. It's just that no one talks about it. And I had an opportunity earlier this year as part of an internal event, as part of Illuminate, our women's group, to really hear from the most senior of women in our organization and a member of our board, who she explained at length the experiences that she had. And I guess that day I never realized that, you know, everybody experiences that. It's just the extent at which how you feel like you can, the tools that you have in place to action it, and how you can build up your own confidence and your self-belief. So I'd say the first thing for me is, I think it's really important that you think about the circle of people that you engage with. I had some really strong and very impactful mentors and sponsors for me. Some of them I probably couldn't have seen that they were that for me until I had that language and I understood what I meant by that, because sometimes I think mentorship is hard to navigate, right? Because you see the effects of great mentorship, but there's very little talking about how you can set up that relationship and how you get on the path for that. So I think when you think about a group of people that you can go to that kind of act like your cheerleaders, or, you know, build you up maybe when you're going through a period of difficulty. If you think about people, you know, the difference between a sponsor and a mentor is mentors speak with you, sponsors speak about you. Sometimes somebody can be the same. So, you know, sometimes people can be both for you. And sometimes you have to understand, you know, is those two different people that you need. But I think sharing your ambition, feeling maybe the fear and pushing on anyhow, it seems like an obvious thing to say, but I think it is really real. I think about big conversations that I need to have. There's always a time period at the very beginning where I think, can I do this, or am I ready? And you have to remind yourself that, you know, you've prepared, you are ready. This is a difficult thing and that you can do difficult things. And so I think it's really about believing in yourself and pushing forward.
I think that is a lovely piece of advice, because as you said, you know, I'm speaking from a personal standpoint, I get imposter syndrome, you know, and it is difficult. You then go, oh my goodness, I'm like, how am I going to be able to do this? You know, am I the right person for this? And you do just need to take that step back. And I think having people that can go, yes, of course you can, but also being kind to yourself as well. Yeah. And talking to yourself as though if someone was coming to you and saying, I can't do this. Yes, yes, you can do this. It's not always easy when you get in your head to you know, foster that mentality, but it is really, really important. And I think we're seeing that in terms of the digital world. You see, you know, influencers going, you know, I also have doubts and things like that. And it's, I think, we need to be talking about the fact that we all have doubts, and like you said, and because that's so relatable, and you then go, oh phew, it isn't just me, you know, and that kind of, it helps you sort of go, I'm in the same boat, and if that person can do that, and if that person still feels that way, you know, I can do that. So I think that's a lovely piece of advice, Ema. Well, it's been absolutely fantastic to have you on the show. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you've enjoyed it. And, you know, I really hope the listeners have taken some really great advice from that. I think, you know, we've gleaned some fantastic, invaluable insight from you here.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Really enjoyed it.
I mentioned a couple of times throughout this interview that equity wasn't a concept I'd come across before. Is it something you have, Gwen?
So if you were to have asked me maybe about a year ago or so, I probably wouldn't have, but it's become more and more often that it's been coming up in conversation. And I really like this idea that, you know, the distinction between equity and equality, you know, creating a level playing field that requires that not everyone comes from the same background, and it understands that just because, or rather, it understands the idea that everyone has the chance to be able to achieve something. You give equal chance to somebody that's, you know, what people think of when they think of equality, they think that you're just doling out awards or pay or positions just because we're trying to make parity between people. But equity, it's having the idea that there's a level playing field that everyone goes to, and then your skills then shine afterwards. That, you know, you're not, just because you're in a certain position doesn't mean you can't show that you can perform and do something. And, you know, having that distinction, I think, as we've seen here, is, you know, something that I very much am glad to hear of. And hopefully, you know, something that everyone going forward, as it seems to be coming more and more in the conversation, is something that's going to be something that we're going to hear a lot more from food manufacturers in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you. It's such a lovely concept. I have to say, you know, like you, as I said, it was a term I wasn't familiar with, only when I was watching Dragon's Den and you had Deborah Meaden ask about equity. So, you know, it's nice to hear about this sort of, this new meaning of it. And as you said, it's such an important concept, because, you know, sometimes we do need an extra, as I kept calling it, a sort of step ladder. I keep referring to that because I'm very, very short and often require a step ladder for things, including my kitchen cupboards. Well, that is all we have time for today, but you can join us next month for another episode of the Food Manufacturer Podcast. There'll be plenty more content on weather, cats, houses. I'm sure we'll get an update from you, Gwen, right? Oh, and food and drink. Until next time.